Hi, my name is Sarah Tran.
And this is Megha Jan.
And we
are Technology.
So, hey everyone, welcome back to Technology. And today we're going to be doing a really unique episode about cryptocurrencies. And we even brought on an expert. His name is Jay Chung, and he went to Penn and studied in the management and technology program. So go Quakers, right? And on top of that, he is the co-founder of Rocket BC, which has built the technologies behind crypto locally, which is what we'll be talking more about in this episode. And that's a platform that provides non-custodial smart contract escrows for P2P crypto trading. That's a mouthful, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, thanks for the intro. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, and we're super excited to have you. So really quickly, for our audience who may not know everything there is to know about cryptocurrency, we want to start off with a really simple question. What exactly is cryptocurrency, and how does it work, and what technologies are used to back it currently?
Yeah, so I think when people think about crypto, if they even ever heard of it, they'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard of Bitcoin. And to some degree, I mean, Bitcoin is the most popular and I guess most used cryptocurrency out there, just in terms of adoption and knowledge. But crypto in general really is a small piece of a technology called blockchain. And which is sort of like a decentralized ledger. Right now, blockchain has evolved from just being the Bitcoin ledger to having several chains as well as several different protocols and technologies. So outside of Bitcoin, we have smart contract platforms like Ethereum and EOS. We also have Polkadot nowadays. Like, there's a lot of protocols out there with vibrant communities that are building out sort of decentralized ecosystems and ledgers. Yeah, I guess that's the best summary in short.
That's really awesome to hear. So I actually had a couple of minutes before this interview for our viewers and listeners, and I decided to create an account on CryptoLocally as someone who has very little experience with crypto or just blockchain as a whole. And so it was really cool to just be able to navigate the platform. And so I guess that leads us to our next question. I guess one of my thoughts was that it almost seems like CryptoLocally's goal is to make cryptocurrencies or just cryptos more democratized and accessible. And I kind of like to think about it as like almost like a Robin Hood for crypto. How do you feel about that? Is that like a precise way to think about it?
So I guess that's an interesting way to put it. I've never thought about it before. We normally, when we talk to people that aren't as familiar with the crypto space, we say it's kind of like eBay or Craigslist for crypto, just because it has this peer-to-peer aspect where buyers and sellers are selling directly to each other. So it's not us doing the brokerage and dealing. It's actually you could go on and buy or you could go on and sell. So both sides of the market are by the user. And just in general, CryptoLocally is actually quite different from typical centralized exchanges you may think of. Like you may have heard of Coinbase. For most US users, they like using Coinbase because it's sort of an all-in-one solution. CryptoLocally, on the other hand, is a peer-to-peer gateway where like a lot of people in developing countries and emerging economies use it a lot because of that aspect where if you don't have like a bank or if you don't actually have like the financial tools and infrastructure to sort of connect your bank or anything, like get verified in order to get crypto, like this is actually one of the few ways you can access crypto. So, I mean, we do have users from all over the world, but it's usually more popular among them.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that comprehensive overview of what CryptoLocally does and what kind of problem it's addressing. You actually kind of knocked out our next question for you as well. But yeah, I mean, I guess you know, speaking from the fintech startups that I have seen and the founders I've met, it seems like it's a pretty hard space to break into. Mm-hmm. Usually it seems like, you know, these people have a significant amount of experience in crypto already and within fintech. So I was kind of wondering, were you always interested in fintech and how exactly did you land on this idea?
Yeah, great question. So where should I start? I've been coding since I was pretty little. And when I was in high school, I started working part-time as a developer at a couple startups in Hong Kong. So I remember I started working at like on this mobile app for a company. And then I swapped over to another company that was building a job platform, like literally a platform where like, it's like kind of like AngelList where you try to look for jobs. Like, and they had this some like machine learning stuff going on. And they happened to just start this small like internal project related to blockchain. And this was around the time I joined the company and they're like, oh, why don't we put this new developer on this blockchain project because we need some extra hands on it. So that was the first time I sort of ever heard or did anything related to blockchain. The only thing I knew about before was like, oh, there's Bitcoin and the prices are going up because it was like during a time when the markets were really pumping. And then, so I was pretty interested. I was like, oh, it seems kind of like a scam, but like, cool, I'll try this project out. So I was working for that project. And that's when I started doing a deep dive on the whole tech underneath like cryptocurrencies itself. It's like, oh, blockchain tech is actually really useful in many regards. There's a lot of applications for it. And during that time, my team manager, Hugo, he was sort of the team lead on the project. I got very close to him and him and I sort of realized, wait, like we could kind of make money off of this project on our own. So that's when we decided to leave that company and start our own project around what we were doing. And that's how I started, I guess, the entrepreneurship route as well. That first project, HK EOS, it's still running. It's mostly just giving us passive income. It's similar to like Bitcoin mining, but on EOS. So we get EOS while running servers, essentially. And we do that for a couple other chains now. And that was sort of where we got the first funds that we used to bootstrap RocketBC and CryptoLocally as a business.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I mean, thank you so much for sharing your journey within that space. Sarah, mm-hmm. Do you want to take the next question?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to jump ahead a couple of questions just because you mentioned something that was really interesting and I think just super relevant right now. You know, since the pandemic has started 6-7 months ago, the stock market has been interesting, to say the least. And we see that happening a lot with, you know, the election right now. But I guess in sort of the macro point of view, how have you seen that these public market trends, or just in general, the state of businesses in the last couple of months, like how have they affected crypto? Like, has it helped it? Has it hurt it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a really good question. Let's see. So it's definitely been affected. Typically, like crypto markets are really pegged to Bitcoin because Bitcoin is basically the largest market cap out of every cryptocurrency out there. And during the first sort of month of really COVID affecting the stock markets, Bitcoin also crashed. And then after that, like, so before any of this, like 2 years ago, Bitcoin was really different from the stock markets. Like if the stock market dumped, it didn't mean that Bitcoin was going to go down. But now it's a little more in line with the markets. Recently, though, a lot of trust has been lost in the US dollar, right? Because, I mean, money's just been printed. On the other hand, something like Bitcoin, no one person owns it and nobody can just print Bitcoin. And similar with a lot of other cryptocurrencies out there, you can't just suddenly generate a bunch of tokens, for yourself. There's no centralized party that owns it. So in this way, like Bitcoin became sort of a great place for even institutions to start investing a lot of their money in it. For example, if you're a company like Square, if you know Square, they're the ones that own Cash App. It's by Jack Dorsey. Jack Dorsey is huge on Bitcoin and actually spent, I think, $50 million in cash of the company and moved it into Bitcoin because they found that holding that cash is actually worse right now. And it's a really good hedge for them going forward to keep that money in Bitcoin instead. So like back in the day, people probably thought Bitcoin is the most volatile and like risky investment ever. But now actually companies are sort of piling money into it like it's gold because it's going to hold value long term.
I completely agree with that point you just made about that differing trend with Bitcoin. I remember a lot of people just a few years ago, like 2014, 2015, saying this is a fad, like it's going to die. There's no way cryptocurrencies are going to be the new normal. And we see actually the otherwise happening now, even in this year, which is like the most volatile year that we've seen in a while. But kind of on that note, we were wondering, how much growth has crypto locally seen as a result of this trend or otherwise? And what do you think has really worked for you guys in terms of like branding and imaging and pushing this product forward?
Yeah. So I think in terms of just growth in general, we've been having steady to like more recently rapid growth in terms of users and volume. So when we started, we had our beta launched in like November. So it's been exactly a year now. And then in March, Crypto Locally was launched. I think month on month, we've been getting like 50% growth in users and volume. And more recently, like with the hype that came into the space with decentralized finance applications and a lot more money just piling into the industry, we've definitely gotten a lot more interest from users and people out there who are looking for like an easy way to cash in and cash out crypto. So normally in the landscape, like if you want to get an altcoin, not Bitcoin, let's say you want to get EOS, which is a cryptocurrency, you need to go to an exchange and get verified, wait a couple of days for that to happen, then connect your bank. You have to then buy Bitcoin and then you trade Bitcoin into EOS, for example. And the whole thing is like impossible for your grandma to work out. It's never going to happen. Our platform is more for noob users who just want to come on and then they have Venmo. They find an offer where someone's selling for Venmo and then boom, you're done within 5 minutes. So I guess like because our use case has like attracted a lot more like retail users who have also been getting more and more interested into the space, like that strategy worked pretty well for us. And in terms of branding and like the marketing strategy, we've really been targeting communities that are already either trading crypto or like are interested in crypto. We've been like recruiting ambassadors around the world. So we have ambassadors now from Africa, from Southeast Asia, like Philippines, Indonesia. And these people are like helping us push the platform and building communities with like chat groups around it and like trying to build up a trading community within their region, which has been super helpful for us.
Nice. So you mentioned like all these different countries and you did touch upon it earlier as well. You said like most of your user demographic is concentrated in developing countries. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of wondering like, what are the main countries where this is being used? Mm-hmm. And did you kind of envision this happening when you first started? Like, what did the MVP look like and how far have you guys come?
Yeah,
since then?
Great question. So we did market research. For sure. Like we did a lot of market research. And even then, like we didn't actually expect this to be the, like have the biggest use case in developing countries. Like I was just thinking more like I wanted to buy a certain crypto, but it took me so long to actually figure out how to buy it. And that's why I was like, why don't we just like make this process simpler and build this platform? That was like the first reason why like we came up with this idea. And then I guess like once we created it, we realized that we were actually attracting user bases from our top countries are Nigeria, Ghana, Philippines, Indonesia, and India, and USA. So USA is just in there. But like normally Southeast Asian countries and African countries. So we didn't really expect that, but we realized that like they were really attracted to the platform. And the reason being there are not as many alternatives in those countries compared to, let's say, Korea, China, or US, where there's a lot more like financial infrastructure built up where it's easier for platforms to service them. So I guess that's the like biggest takeaway there. Like we definitely tried to research this stuff, but unless you actually get hit by real users and real feedback, it's really hard to know. Yeah,
that's a really good point you bring up about how like sort of the difficulties it is to grow and sustain this business. But you did bring up an interesting point earlier, which I kind of want to go back to, about how from HK EOS, you kind of were able to bootstrap crypto locally. But other than that, how have you been able to fund it? Have you guys raised outside investment? And what has been that process for you?
Yeah. So when we started HK EOS, it was just three people, me, Hugo, and this other guy, Devin, who is an investment banker. He was at Morgan Stanley. So like in the beginning, we sort of pulled the money that we were making from HK EOS, which when the markets were good, around like a couple thousand a day. And then we really wanted to scale up quickly. Like we need to hire more developers. We need to hire a marketing team. And, it's kind of like, it kind of hit the point where we're like, okay, we should probably raise VC funds. So we actually raised our pre-seed from Tomorrow BC. I don't know if you guys know Eric Schmidt, the ex-CEO of Google. So he created a VC a while ago called Tomorrow Ventures, and then they partnered with Block One, which is a which is the company behind EOS, and they created this VC fund of like $50 million, and we managed to raise our pre-seed from them. Just happened to be, I think, at the right place, right time, building cool stuff, and we got into their radar, so managed to get that. And then we built out the platform, and over a year started, you know, seeing a lot of growth and traction. And we were actually at the point where we were basically going to hit the end of our runway. And then a couple months ago, we started, marketing a lot around our tokens. So we also have a native cryptocurrency for crypto locally called Give. And that token started getting a lot of interest from investors. And we ended up raising a lot bigger of a round with the token. So we didn't sell any equity in the company at all. It was just a token raise recently, which went crazy. And now we're in pretty good shape to scale even more.
Nice. It's really cool to like learn about the recent history of crypto locally, I guess. And you know, you're mentioning that you guys have kind of these new almost like sub projects going on. So I was wondering, like, what do you think is the next big thing for crypto locally? And then what do you think is the next big technology that can change cryptocurrencies as a whole?
Okay. Yeah. So I think in terms of our roadmap and vision, sort of staying with the mantra of the whole industry, which is like decentralized governance and you know, no one entity sort of controlling anything. We want to make crypto locally more managed and governed by the community and its users. So around our token, the Give token, we're building out a governance platform where people can actually make proposals and vote for stuff like, oh, let's list this new token because it has a vibrant community around it. And people vote using Give tokens in order to pass that proposal. Let's say someone else wants to increase fees or decrease fees so that our platform attracts more users. Then they put it up for a vote. So we want to do this because we really want to stick to sort of giving the community more power and giving them more of a voice to decide what happens on the platform, and actually increasing engagement from our users. On the other hand, technology that's really driving the space, I would say there's a few things that's really exciting right now. One is DeFi. DeFi is especially sort of a big deal right now because of what's happened recently, where the Fed just decided to print trillions of dollars. It's just like, I guess right now the interest rates when you put your money in a bank or even a CD is like close to zero. It's nothing. There's no reason for you to hold cash at the moment because you're just going to lose to inflation. But on the other hand, in the world of DeFi and blockchain, you can actually hold cryptocurrencies and stable coins, which are USD pegged tokens, and earn yield on a lot of these platforms, like lending platforms, for example. And with minimal risk, you could easily make around like 6 to 8% like annual yield right now, which is like pretty amazing compared to what you would be getting at traditional banks right now. So I think that's sort of why the DeFi angle of the industry really took off recently. It was just like people had sort of no idea where to put their cash. And then this sort of avenue started taking off, which is really cool. Another one is NFTs. They're non-fungible tokens. So these are like collectibles, baseball cards or something, but they're put on blockchain. And they've been getting a lot of traction. Like people are collecting NFTs because you actually get guaranteed uniqueness on these items when they're on blockchain. So, and you can also trade and settle immediately. So people have been trading these items on blockchain, and like there's been like stupid things where a small artwork of a cat just gets sold for like over $100,000. So yeah, those are the big, I guess, drivers of the space right now.
I would totally purchase that picture of the cat.
Yeah.
But that was really awesome to hear your insights on sort of the technologies that are really facilitating the growth in the overall industry. And that also kind of leads me to my next question. And I think our final question for you, it's about what advice would you have for anyone who is a current entrepreneur, whether they're in the fintech or the crypto space, or for our student entrepreneurs or aspiring ones who are listening? I'm sure we would love to hear some more about what advice you have. And I you kind of did mention, you know, the growing market opportunity this is and how relevant this product is right now. But I would love to hear what other pieces of advice you have.
Yeah, I think there's a few things. These might be some hot takes. They're just my opinions. But something that a lot of, I guess, student entrepreneurs run into problems with is they build their whole team around students. So all of the co-founders, and sometimes this works for sure, but a lot of times it doesn't because they're going to college, they're going to school, and a lot of them are busy. Not all of them have the same goals, and you end up sort of blurring the vision on the company. So from my experience, I think it's always best to have co-founders that are not in the same environment as you. And who can also, invest more time and energy into the business, with you. I think that's super important because you also need different perspectives. As a student, you're great at a lot of things. You can balance so many things at once. You have a lot of skills, ambition, potential, but you also need someone that's experienced, and you need people with different skill sets on the team in order to make it more possible to succeed. On the other hand, I also think that if like going to school and running a business is quite difficult, doesn't mean that just because you have an idea you should drop out of school, but you shouldn't feel like you should box yourself in to sort of, I guess, what a lot of college students think about when, you know, they're looking for jobs and looking at their future. Like, the future isn't just investment banking and consulting. And like, if you have one shot, like, if you're really passionate about something, then like, feel free to give it a go. And if you really put in the effort and energy into building something great, then that there shouldn't be any regrets. And in terms of like, yeah, just trying to balance school and work, it works to a certain point. But if you feel like you really want to focus on one thing over the other, like, you shouldn't stop yourself. I think it's at least good to try and know that you tried, instead of giving up on something because you feel like you might not have enough time and it conflicts with other things. Yeah.
Thank you so much for giving like genuine advice. I feel like a lot of people, especially in like Silicon Valley, where like I go to school, and then like, even across the country, and when it comes to entrepreneurship, just give the same advice. Like, you hear the same stuff over and over again, and you get tired of listening to it. But this I think is actually super useful, not only for listeners but for us as well. So thank you for sharing. Since you are a successful startup founder and an Ivy League dropout, I figured it would be best to ask you, when did you know it was the right time to fully pursue crypto locally?
Yeah, I think it was only a couple months ago when I made that decision. And it really was because, so online school started, and I took, like, the first day of classes, I actually tried to listen in. And then I realized, like, I had meetings scheduled at the same time. So I had two screens, like, one for work meetings where I was listening in, and then, like, school classes. And then I was trying to do everything, and I realized, like, I wasn't happy, like, doing school. I was more excited and passionate about work and actually trying to make this a success. So I was like, you know what, like, why not give it a shot so that I have no regrets if it works or doesn't work. And then I'll know for sure. And also, it was just like the payoff with online school and whatnot. It was just like the parts that I really enjoyed about college, because college is fun, to be honest. But the parts that I really enjoyed about college weren't there this time. And I just felt like it made more sense. It was like someone telling me, like, you know, you got to go for it. So I decided to make that decision.
Yeah, that must have been a really like hard decision, but probably now that you're looking back on it, the best and right decision, right? Was that what you'd say?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, just looking back, there was no way I would have even passed any of my classes this semester if I tried to hang on there.
So yeah, I guess,
and the business itself did quite well since I decided to make that choice. So yeah, I think it worked hand in hand.
That makes me like super happy to hear. I'm gonna like cheer your name on when I see your face on like the television and billboards one day. Be like, I know he's a pen dropout.
Yeah, I hope so.
But also, like, it probably was a really hard decision at the same time. Like, you know, we're both Asian Americans, and you know, we have certain cultural expectations and standards.
Yep.
You know, and so I guess, what was that like for you? Like, how did your parents react?
My parents, they told me, oh, we saw it coming anyway. Just because I've actually, I guess, been a little independent since before college, working at a bunch of startups. Like, I've been splitting time with work and school and trying to sort of, I guess, pay for myself and, try to, you know, at least, lessen the load on my parents, since I was little. So I guess, like, at this point, my parents were just like, yeah, it's his decision because of, you know, like, just the way I've, I guess, planned things and also done things for the last few years. On the other hand, like, that's not the case for most people. And like, just having Asian parents, the culture is is very much like investment banking, consulting, like, that's the job you need to get, or they're not going to be happy. You know, that's what a lot of, I guess, students feel. when they're thinking about getting a job, applying for jobs, starting to recruit, and like going to college, it's all about grades and getting a corporate job. And I just think that the more you try to frame yourself inside this box and set up these expectations for yourself, the more difficult it is for you to be happy and like enjoy the achievements you make. Because if you ever sort of deviate from that box, then you're going to be unhappy with yourself. And I think there's no reason to set those expectations so strictly. I think when you see an opportunity and you really have that gut feeling that you want to take it, then you should take it. And if even if it may not, you know, fly with your parents or whoever influences your life all the time, I think it's definitely something that you should talk about and you should consider.
Well, it's really good to know that your parents almost expected it in a way. You did a great job setting the expectations there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I think, super useful advice, Jay. I really appreciated you candidly sharing, you know, what worked for you, what worked for crypto locally, and the path that you're taking. I mean, I've always said being an Ivy League dropout is in some ways better than being an Ivy League graduate. So we'll be waiting for the day you're a commencement speaker at Penn and you get that honorary degree.
I really hope so. Trying to make it work and got to work hard for it.
For sure. Well, I think this is the end of our episode about crypto locally. Jay, thank you so much for coming on once again. I think it was really enjoyable for both Sarah and I and our audience.
Thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode. If you guys have any more questions for Jay or want to engage in this conversation, go ahead and tweet at us. We're @technology1 on Twitter. And also feel free to follow us for more content at technology.podcast on Instagram. I hope you guys enjoyed us spilling the tea on cryptocurrency with Jay Chung, and we'll see you next week.